Welcome to The Impossible Network, a podcast about the stories of ordinary people living extraordinary lives. People who've broken through obstacles, fearlessly exceeded the boundaries society sets, taken the chances, regardless of risk, that most fear, in pursuit of their mission, vision, or goals. Each week, we explore how their impossible became possible, how their upbringing affected them, how creativity fueled them, and how serendipity guided them. This week's guest is Alessandra Laria. Ali is a co-founder of She Says, a global community focused on engagement, education, and advancement for women in the creative fields. From starting with seven people in a room in London in 2007, She Says now has a presence in over 45 countries. And while diversity and inclusion remain a vital and pressing leadership issue in the creative industries, Ali continues to push the She Says agenda forward. Ali's impossible journey began growing up in a small village in the depths of the Amazon rainforest. It's taken her from making and selling perfume at junior school, to learning to code in the early 90s at university in Rio, to being an early creative pioneer in London's digital agency scene, to being hired in 2007 by McCann New York as digital creative director, before shifting focus in 2011 to product and service design, ultimately leading to her appointment as executive creative director at global strategy and design firm Frog Design. With over 18 global industry awards to her name, listed in Fast Company's League of Extraordinary Women and their Most Creative People in Business list, and with a clear vision for the future of She Says, Ali's impossible journey is far from over. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for being on the show, Ali. Welcome to the Impossible Network.
My pleasure.
Ali, you and I first met back in, I think it was around 2008 at our McCann days. Was it that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was around there. You were in New York and I was in London. I think we share that view of creativity, that it's not really a domain reserved for the few, but it's a capacity within us all, albeit often suppressed and confined in many ways by the educational or corporate attitudes and conventions and norms that we've faced in working in advertising and happening companies. And creativity has really been at the core of your journey. So I'd like to start where your journey began.
Well, I'm Brazilian, as you can tell by the funny accent. I have a mix of Brazilian South London accent. When I was 1 till I was 10, I lived in the Amazon jungle. My dad got a call to be one of the first doctors there, and I think that influenced a lot of my upbringing and how it informed my attitude and way of working and creating.
When you say the jungle, a city in the jungle?
No, the jungle, right? You know, there was like one street in my village and all the houses were powered by petrol generators and we only had TV from 6 to 8 and electricity. So it was like really basic. I guess it comes from living in the jungle. I kind of always had this kind of fearlessness about things and just being able to see things differently, living in not in a city and then moving to a city, I think it informed a lot of what I did. I was always a self-starter in the sense that kids' first jobs are like a lemonade stand. Mine was like a perfume stand. I used to make perfume by getting lavender from my grandmother's garden and putting alcohol in it.
Wow.
And putting on a little bottle and trying to sell it. It was really funny.
This was your initiative or did your mother encourage you?
I decided to do it. I don't know why I decided to do it, but it was me. And I always kind of from there, always trying to do things a little bit different. It's something that stays with me to this day. I think I built a whole career by being different.
So that was the beginning of your entrepreneurial sort of creative journey.
Yeah.
Wow. I never realized that. You know, sort of a secret.
I didn't tell you about the perfume stand.
No, never. No. So I think it's fair to say then that you really are one of the early digital creative pioneers, going back to the 90s when the early stage of the internet. What led you to focus and build your career in digital creativity? I mean, you could have gone down the fragrance route and launched an empire that way.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't smell that good in the end. I was really in love with computers, you know. I just really loved, one of my first jobs was actually coding and then I went to the more design side of things, but I was really in love with them. I started working When I was still, I was in at university working for the university publishers, and I was working with the very first Macs, you know, those like tiny boxes. I think it was called the Mac.
The Mac, yeah, the first Mac.
Yeah, so I was just, it I just
hello
loved.
On the screen.
Yeah, I just loved trying to build a. You know, types things and trying to design on PageMaker it was at the time, and everything was so slow and I would get things wrong, and then I kind of liked the accidents that, you know, the computer threw at me when I was doing things wrong, and I was just always fascinated by computers, so kind of started from there, like from the this I and I was and I did Mac and PC. I did research on PCs for the university, and I did design on the Macs for the universities.
How do you get from the jungle selling perfume to being at university working with a Mac, an early stage Mac?
So I was, when I was one till I was 10, that was the jungle. And then when I was 10, I came to a big city, I guess. And that's when I was trying to do my own things, like do the lemonade stand, the perfume stand, and my version of the lemonade stand. And also I started writing my own comic book. I made my own characters. And then I would, just to go back to the idea that we're talking about being different, then I decided to be a goth in Brazil in the heat in Rio de Janeiro, and, you know, very kind of 90 degrees, a terrible idea, wearing black and mascara, just, you know, would never stay put. So I was, I think, and I guess when I got to university, it was so interesting because the majority of the women, the majority of people doing research for the uni publishers were women. However, nobody, the guys operating the computers were men. And I'm like, I'm going to do that. You know, I'm going to do that. And just went and did it. And I was like probably one of the only women that knew how to operate the machines back in 1990s.
Yeah. Do you think you had a natural aptitude for it?
I had a natural curiosity for it.
Okay.
I probably wasn't that apt to begin with, you know, but I just was very curious. And I was like, what are they doing that? I'm going to do that. They as in the women. So I just went for it.
Ever since I met you, you've struck me as a very good listener, but also very self-assured in your own creative thinking. That's an early example of you being sort of self-assured and actually sort of, to use a... probably a Sheryl Sandberg, that sort of overused phrase, leaning in and sort of saying, no, I'm gonna be part of this. I'm not gonna be on the outside. I wanna actually.
Yeah, but I think what is different than the Sheryl Sandberg leaning in is that she was leaning in into someone else's world, mm-hmm. right? She was like, for me, my perspective, she was trying to get women to fit into the status quo. And for me, it was always the opposite. I was leaning in by being me and being different.
Uh-huh.
I guess like this idea of playing with difference was what made me confident, because it takes a lot of confidence to do something that no one else is doing and still keep doing it, because then naturally people are going to try and say no and get you back. So,
and presumably culturally in Brazil at that time, it wasn't expected for women to be stepping into that sort of domain.
No, yeah. Brazil, I think, is still, there are still places where, you know, for advertising industry is not great still. Design industry is even worse. I had no fear, and maybe that goes back to the jungle of like being different, and the difference made me a confident person. And also, I guess my parents were awesome in the sense that they always traveled everywhere with us, you know, around South America. We were always traveling and seeing different things. And, you know, we were just chatting before this, like they almost got arrested in Chile for singing anti-Pinochet slogans. And we were with them all the time. I've seen military approaches with guns. And, you know, so I've seen very interesting parts of the world and I guess that also helped.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, what was your father's career that led you to move around like that?
He was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my mom was a history teacher, but then she started working in education. But my dad was a doctor. And the only reason why we didn't get arrested in Chile was because he served as a doctor in the military. And then he still had his little ID from the military and said, no, it's fine, I'm military. And then they let us go. Otherwise, we would be arrested.
Wow. So your upbringing, your parents really did encourage that sense of creative exploration, confidence, that it you believe that it did actually play a part in your defining who you are.
Yes, yes. Part of it is me and the idea of like always trying to look at things the other in other ways, but part of like looking at things the other way comes from my parents.
Was that more your mother or your father?
Both.
Both of them. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You've got siblings?
My brother too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My brother is the John Peel. John Peel is a very famous DJ in the UK, and my brother started making his own fanzines when he was 15, and then became a record label, an indie record label in Brazil. And he, you know, so both of us, and it's funny because we're both very creative, and my dad was a doctor, very analytical sometimes, and my mom was a teacher, and none of them had jobs in design or any considered creative fields, but they were very creative in their own ways.
Besides your digital creative roles in advertising and design, you've also been responsible for promoting the creative opportunities for women around the world through your own personal innovation, The Social Network, She Says, which I think you launched back in 2007, 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You touched on women's empowerment, the desire to be different, but also to not sort of stand back and grasp what you want. Did you identify that as missing in a lot of other women, and you felt responsible, or you felt a need to try and encourage other women to have the same sense of self-belief? What was it that led you to launch She Says?
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think women were not and are not lacking self-belief. I think we are lacking a different perspective and a new system. And this is what we're trying to create. We are trying to have different perspectives, and almost a new operating system for the world of work and creativity and advertising. We wanted different perspectives. That's why Laura, my co-founder, and I created She Says in the UK in 2007, because whenever it came to judging awards and get invited to speak at events, it was always the two of us, and we're like, this is not right, you know, it needs to be at least 10 of us to begin with. So we wanted other women to do what we were doing. So it started like that. When we started She Says, there was nothing, again, to go back to the difference, there was nothing like it. Like, there were two women's groups, and they were for senior women. It was like all power suits, senior women, you had to pay and you didn't have a say. So we wanted to do exactly the opposite of that. Like, She Says has no barriers for entries. That's why everything is free and non-hierarchical. You can approach us at any time. And what is very different is for the community and by the community. In that sense, the community has a say. So all the events that we do, most of the events on the bigger chapters, we don't come up with them. The community comes up with them. So She Says it's truly run by the community.
So when you identified this back in 2007 with Laura, and Laura also works in the industry?
Yeah, she does. She's a partner of an agency called Mr. President. She's on the creative side too.
Okay, so when you both sat down and identified that there was an issue there, how did you go from that sort of that vision or that sort of that drive and initial idea all the way through into building what is now essentially a global creative network?
We always had this principle of not being scared of or afraid to start small. Our first meeting was seven of us at an agency called Dare in London back then. And then I always ask women to bring more women or men. And, you know, 7, 10 became 50, then became 100. And now it's probably, last time I counted, it was 45,000.
So, across how many countries?
Countries, I'm not sure. I think it's about 45 cities. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, including the Middle East and Asia. All continents, actually.
And how have you seen the women's perspectives change and their perspective towards leadership change over the 10 years that you've been running, She Says?
I've seen more women get higher up at like agencies, design studios. It's my favorite thing when someone I've mentored or a junior designer gets to be a creative director somewhere. So I've seen those things happen. I've seen she's I've seen in a group, like she says, become 5,000 other groups. We've still pioneered a bunch of things. We're still the first to do many things, including speed mentoring events, first women's hackathon in New York. We had a lot of firsts, but I've seen not only individuals, women, individuals step up, but I've also seen groups, communities of women just procreate very fast. So,
which is amazing. But it, as you identified earlier, there's still a long way to go. There's still barriers.
Yes.
There's still, you could argue, a lot of it is dominated by men.
Yeah, there is still a stupid pay gap everywhere you go. And whether it's UK, US, Brazil, anywhere, there's still a pay gap. And it gets worse if you're a black woman. It gets even worse if you're a Latino woman. I think the pay gap for Latino women is 55%.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a standard across UK.
That's mostly US. Yeah, yeah.
And how are you as an organization, or how is your network, trying to sort of raise the debate on that and address it?
Our approach is to basically create a forum where women can learn from each other and become better. And it's basically a bottom-up approach, right? Well, all we're giving them a forum to get their voices heard. We're giving them the confidence. We're giving them even a place to be a speaker, because sometimes you do these big conferences and they all like very famous speakers, and actually we think our collective voices are more interested, and there are people that never spoke before that have a lot to say. So we are about giving them that voice too. It's not just because you're someone very important. I like we were saying in the beginning, we think all of us can be creative. A lot of us I also have very interesting things to say, you know, and none of, you know, and you might not be Sheryl Sandberg that gets to write a book, but you have something interesting to say. And I think the collective intelligence of women is potentially more powerful than a Sheryl Sandberg writes a book, because we have different perspective, and it's, you know, and you take what is interesting to you. That's why we did the free career advice tool called Boom. So if you go to shesaysboom.com, it's just like the advice that you're going to seek is basically tailored to you. Because if you read a book, it's just one perspective. Whereas if you have 100 perspectives of women, one of them you're going to identify with, right?
Yep.
Whereas if you read a book, you might identify with 1% of that book. You might identify with 100%. I identified with like 1% of that book.
So it's been 10 years. In that time, obviously, you've witnessed a lot of change in terms of the diversity and levels of inclusion, albeit it's still not where you would like it to be. But recently I read that you'd said that you'd switched from hoping things will change to knowing things will change. What changes do you expect to see for women in society and business or even politics over the next 10 years?
I think having more women in leadership positions will help create a new world work order, because it's not just having women in leadership positions, but it's also how we view leadership and different perspective on how we work. For example, I've known a lot of new companies, mostly women led again, where they, for example, have 4-day week work. Mm-hmm. They have a different approach to how you can have as much holiday as you want. So just don't corrupt the system. Yeah. Let's be all honest, because we're all adults here. I think the change is not the change in mindset and perspective on leadership. I think it's like a change coming from the leadership in culture that affects the way we work.
It sounds more trust-based. There's more vulnerability, embracing acceptance of failure.
Yes.
Obviously managed and controlled failure.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, it's an overused word at the moment in the industry, particularly because of the sort of the fail fast, fail cheap attitude.
Yeah, I think all those two or three things, with the addition of you being a good listener, it's the leaders don't have to talk and have all the answers all the time, but they have to be good at listening. Sometimes I was joking with someone that a CEO is like a community manager. mm-hmm. You have to keep an eye on the business, but ultimately you need to keep an eye inside your company. If your people are happy, your business will be great. Your business will thrive. If your people are unhappy, I think there is very little that you can do. I mean, you saw the stats, like it's over 70% of the workforce are not happy and engaged on the creative industries. So,
and how are you going to have great creative ideas and that stuff with that?
Yeah. Working stupid. This is what, how you work right now and having leaders that don't recognize that. That's why, for example, mothers don't like work after they have kids, and most of them leave the industry. And that's why I know brilliant women that are doing their own thing right now, because the way we work is stupid. Why? Because we have only one perspective. I think Melinda Gates, Bill Gates' wife, put it in a really interesting way. She said, our daughters are working in a work environment made for our grandfathers. So it's not just a case of women in leadership positions. It's the whole way we work needs to change. And I think a new perspective from women will help with that. A women-led agency or a women-led studio will be very good to mothers, for example, and will understand how they work and operate, and will allow for a new way of working that suits them. This doesn't happen right now because all the ways that we work were created basically from one perspective, mostly white male. So, for example, the idea that we have to, especially in the advertising industry, which is absolutely stupid, that we have to, it's like how long you stay at work. That's ridiculous because there is research that proven that it's not, you know, your performance is not related to time spent at work.
Yeah, and particularly in creative and design,
yeah,
world,
it's related to, you know,
sitting in the office.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly, and it's related to performance, and it's not related to how long you spend in your desk. So I think having more perspective, have more women in leadership position will help other women, but will also help the way we work and the way we lead. Like women bring new ways of leading too. So I think it's a systemic change. It's not just more women in leadership positions because of gender. It's because of the perspective and changing the way we work, change the way we think, multiple ways that we think, and not just women, but women of color, like, you know, different backgrounds, different cultures.
Are there any examples out there of organizations you've witnessed that are led by women or of a better sort of level of inclusion within those organizations, and you're seeing a change in the way that they are managed?
Yes, yes. Usually women-owned agencies, like Quirk Creative. Corina at Mother, she once told us that if she wanted to set an example of living by 5:30, she had to live at 5:30. So because people have to pick up kids or because they just need the time to meditate or whatever it is. So I've seen that happen in a few places.
And is there anything within that she says in terms of, do you have a sort of mission statement, a vision statement to support that way of leadership?
Yeah, our mission is actually to get more women in leadership positions, because I think if we do that, we're going to change a bunch of things for the better. Mm-hmm. Even not beyond creative, you know. I truly believe that if we had more women in government, there would be way less wars.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to timestamp this podcast at the midterms. What will happen with more women running than ever before these positions? That could create a sort of seismic change in the sort of the nature of U.S. politics. Mm-hmm. But I think we're seeing around the world. We're seeing. Look at for example, Norway. That obviously have a president of Norway.
Yeah, and Iceland made it illegal for women and men to get paid different salaries. We need more Icelands. Mm-hmm. Also, it was really interesting to see the Prime Minister of New Zealand bring her kids to the UN, you know.
Exactly. So we are seeing change in areas maybe where you wouldn't expect it, which is obviously the political arena. So it's crazy in a way that the creative domain and design and creativity is languishing somewhere behind where we are in politics.
Yeah. But then again, the flip side of that is that we get Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Let's not go there.
No, let's not. Okay. So I'd like to understand what role serendipity has played, or happy accidents have occurred along the way that led you to where you are today. Or was this some great grand plan and process that you put in place back in the jungles of Brazil?
Definitely not some great grand plan. I think part of it, a little bit of again, wanting to do something different. It's a mix of wanting to do something different that I haven't done before, learning new skills, and a little bit of serendipity. So I, for example, when I left McCann, you remember that,
yeah.
I wanted to do more products and services, and then I've decided, okay, how am I going to do that? I have no experience in doing that. So I've used She Says to create my own, and I've tried.
When you say products and services, because some people might not quite understand the context of that.
So yeah, I'll give you an example. So I was like, okay, when I left McCann, like, I'm going to do my own. And I said, what do I have? I have a network at the time was in New York was like 4,000 women. And then my thought was like, why don't I get these women to just get additional income by selling their ideas on a platform, an online platform. So that's why I created Shout. It was very interesting, learned a lot from it. And we were going for 2 years and women did get paid. And, you know, we did do that additional income. So I was just having trouble scaling the business, partly because of me. And I'm very good at closing deals when I know people. When I don't know people and I have to cold call, I'm terrible. So it was very interesting learning, and that kind of launched me to meet other people that then decided to like do other startups with, or, you know, have an experience and help startup groups with their branding and comms, and they will teach me about products and services. And then which led me to completely change my career from advertising to go into design. And that's when I started working at Frog, when I did, it was more kind of the innovation space.
Right. So the serendipity element of it came from where?
I think the serendipity came from, I decided that I wanted to do something different, and therefore went and met different people. It's the same thing with networking, mm-hmm. right? If you want to meet brilliant people, you shouldn't chat to your immediate network. Yeah. You should chat to your second immediate network or third immediate network. So it spearheaded a whole like new career, for example.
So this is, in a way, this is a pattern. And it's no different to you when you went to the university and saw people using the Mac and thought, I want a bit of that.
Yes.
And you're saying, I want to get into products and service design, and
yeah,
there's nothing to stop you.
Yeah.
For me, it comes down to this facet of your character, that you're open to change, that you're not resistant. So there's an element of fearlessness there that seems to be sort of instilled, like you said, by your parents and your upbringing.
Yeah, I think adaptability as well. Like I adapt really fast to many situations. I've gone from having a big salary, from having a small salary, and I adapted then. I went from living in almost a squat in London to like having, you know, building my own house, and I can go back either way. Like I can basically just work with what I have. And I guess that is a very Brazilian thing.
Yeah.
I can definitely work with what I have.
I've worked with you directly in New York for close on a year and a half, 2 years, and I never really encountered any pessimism or felt that you feared failure. And obviously we touched on that stuff, that fearlessness you have, or a sense of rejection. But there's a lot of people in the creative business and the design industry that still have a glass half empty attitude, or harbor self-limiting beliefs that hold them back, avoid them from taking risks or chances. How do you actually manage to remain optimistic in the face of potential sort of failure or rejection?
I think, yeah, I'm a total compulsive optimist. I guess the thing that we were chatting before was the idea of like a growth mindset. I don't see failure as failure. I see failure as learning. And that's a very different mindset. Sometimes people are very hard on themselves because they see failure as failure and you're never going to recover from it. I see failure as learning. That's what makes me a compulsive optimist. I've always been this way.
As you say, this is something that was in your upbringing. How do you, or how does society, or how do groups like yours instill that sense of belief or that attitude to life when people that maybe haven't grown up with that, that have come from very sort of stable upbringings, that maybe haven't had the parental support that you had? Have you got any mechanisms within She Says to encourage women to sort of think differently?
I think the idea of it being very open and that we always say this to everybody, like, just say it, you know, don't think whether it's wrong or not, just say it. If it's wrong, it's wrong, and you're going to get it right next time. And I guess it's just making them do the first step and making them try something is kind of, I guess, where we start with people, being from speakers that never spoke before, or an intern that wants to get a job. There is this one phrase that comes up all the time when they say something, and then we say, why not? You know, why not is a very, is a, as good as the five whys. Like, yeah, you know, the five whys, yes, when you want to really go deep into what you really, why you're really doing something, you have to ask yourself why five times. But there is a very powerful thing on the why not. We just say, okay, why not? The minimum that can happen is people don't get back to you, or, you know, you don't get this, but you can, but you look at all the things that you've learned. So I guess it's just the thing that we give is just this forum for them to be able to, like, do their first why not.
That's brilliant. You've won countless awards, and you've been listed by, as a global creative force by magazines as varied as Forbes and Fast Company. You've also worked alongside some of the world's most prolific creatives and designers in the best agencies in London and New York. What's your view now on, and your observation on creativity and innovation? Is it a talent that can be developed and nurtured, or do you believe it's something that's just innate in people, and some people have it and some people don't?
I think it's a little bit like, I think all of those things come from curiosity, right? And some people are just naturally curious. Some people aren't. I think creativity comes from curiosity. And I think curiosity is, if you have an innate curiosity, it makes things much easier. If you don't have an innate curiosity, you have to develop that. And I think it's possible. I think I've done that with designers and many people that I worked alongside. Sometimes people say, oh, you know, some curiosity is something that you can't teach. We used to joke at McCann, like, all we wanted to be is like curious and open-minded, because I can teach you Photoshop and everything else. Well, now Sketch. But just, some people have it, some people don't, but I do think that you can pull it out of someone a little bit.
Talking about this, sort of the managerial style of male-led organizations, and as there becomes an increasing level of diversity and inclusion in organizations, how do we ensure that that coincides with a move toward more embracing creativity and curiosity more at the heart of organizations? Because we know that the next 10, 20 years, as artificial intelligence becomes more pervasive and omnipresent in our society, that creativity is going to be the thing that defines us. And as our role, and maintaining a role for humanity in the workplace.
You touched on something really interesting there, which is the new, beyond AI, is just how we lead. And I think we need to get better, women and men, at being listening and being present and having a new leadership style that is all about learning and being present and listening. And I think more importantly, this idea that for us to progress is going to be power with, not power over. I think what happens a lot, especially in our industry, is, you know, big egos that wants to have power over. And we need new perspectives that is all about power with.
That's really interesting. So can you delve into that a little bit more? I mean, I naturally understand the power over, but the power with, how would that sort of manifest itself in an organization?
In lots of ways. The power with is, if a junior designer, for example, wants to make a mistake and you said, this is not going to work, let them make the mistake. If it's a controlled risk, let them make the mistake. I had this happen once when a designer had four ideas and the fourth one was terrible. And I said, terrible, but he had to go through the journey of listening, doing it and presenting it, listening from the client. And it wasn't going to be a disaster if he presented it. So this, it's like taking this mini risks with people so that they can learn their own way is one way of doing it.
So really when it comes down to it, it's a lack of the traditional hierarchical, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm more experienced, you've got less, do what I say, to more embracing and inclusion and allowing people to, as you say, to experience themselves why yeah. something isn't going to work.
Yeah, they will learn way more.
And do you think that is?
If they feel it.
But do you have a sense that is more of a female characteristic, or is that just something that's lacking in most people in business in the creative industries today, and it's a characteristic that needs to be embraced?
I know a lot of women that are naturally this way. Mm-hmm. They will kind of encourage you to make your own mistakes, be always present and listening. But it's also because the industry has only one perspective so far, and we need different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the industry had this perspective that it has to be power over, as I say, because a lot of people, because it's all we know. If we don't know any better, if people are not going to change. But this is what we need to do. We need to show different ways of doing things, so we change this way of working, thinking.
I might not put this in the podcast, but I, to be sort of a contrarian, I have worked with female creative leaders that are the opposite of what you're saying, that won't. So I don't think it is just a gender characteristic. I think it is something I agree
it's
with
not,
you.
No, but you know something interesting that you say? It's interesting that you say that, because I've observed that many women suppress that side on them because there is no other way, and they think that's the only way to succeed.
That's very interesting.
So it might be that the women they work with are not like that really. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like that at some point, but then I realized that wasn't me. And I've made grown men cry, but I felt awful, and that wasn't me. My way of leading was completely different. So, and there's a really interesting article in The Atlantic with a research made by partners in law firms, which says that when there is a one-woman partner, she's terrible to other women and everybody else. But when there's two women partners, they are totally different, and they really help everybody in the company, especially women. Mm-hmm. And
do you remember that article, where that is?
Yeah, it was about the queen bee. It's the queen bee effect. It's called the queen bee effect.
Okay, maybe you can share that and I'll put it in the show
notes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I'll definitely want to read that. It's a really interesting sort of perspective on what you're saying, that it might be behaviors adopted by women leaders that are contrary to maybe their natural femininity and their sort of natural management style, because it's been a cultural pressure on them to behave in a certain way. Mm-hmm. How do we address that? How do you address that at an industry level?
You don't. It's bullshit. You just have to change it. Mm-hmm. You don't keep the same status quo for leadership. You just have more people that think differently in leadership positions, I think.
Do you think that's going to be one of the legacy and impacts of She Says, that you're instilling that belief in women not to feel the cultural pressure to behave in a certain
yes.
way or not embrace a certain norm?
Yes. By having gone through it myself, you know, it kind of backfires at some point. It's just not who you are. And it's not a good position to be. It kind of, you know, makes your life miserable, makes yourself miserable. I know so many women that had to adopt a persona that is not them. And it's just sad.
Can we do some quick fire questions? Mm-hmm. What principles do you live by or stand by?
Well, my mission in life, of course, is the same as She Says, to have more women leaders. But I also have this principle that I like to give before I take, and just being kind in general, that helped me with a lot of things in my career, my life, and a lot of the serendipity that we were talking about mm-hmm. before.
Well, I think it's interesting that I've used this before in one of the other interviews I did recently, which was a quote from Tim O'Reilly, which is create more value than you capture. And I think what you're talking about is very similar to that in terms of giving rather than just taking.
Yeah.
And I think also that sort of sense of kindness as well is it is opening up opportunities. I mean, people use the word karma, but I think it's a good characteristic to embrace, and not something that's a natural characteristic that would ever be you would read in management books, traditional management books, in terms of management style?
Well, I don't know. There are lots of new literature on, you know, about this idea that the new leadership is nurturing, is kind, is vulnerable.
Yeah.
I think a great example actually is the, I can't remember his name, the CEO of Tom Shoes.
Yes.
Because as a leader, I think he's very interesting because it's not having all the answers, but being confident that we're going to get there. Right, which is very different. Like sometimes you don't have all the answers in the moment, but you're confident that you're going to get there. Mm-hmm. And I think he is one of these people that embraces it, this mindset.
And I think also that as we are moving into a period, I mean, we've talked a bit about change in the past and having a change, or what you call it, a growth mindset or a change mindset, that we've come from a society, and we're talking here not just about the hierarchical male dominated industries, but a society that has been defined by certainty and consistency, and we're moving into a society of uncertainty and rapid change. And that attitude, that embracing a sense of vulnerability and uncertainty as to not necessarily having the answers, but being prepared to fail and to take chances and take risks, is the characteristic that will probably define companies.
Yes.
And maybe that's why it's women's time to take a more central role in business and leadership, because that is a more, maybe, arguably, that those are characteristics better exemplified by women leaders.
Yes, although there are loads of men that have those characteristics too.
Of course, yeah. I'm not saying there aren't. And I think, you know, but it's Yuval Noah Harari said in his recent book, The 21 Rules for the 21st Century, that we need to embrace critical thinking, communication, collaboration and creativity, and teaching it both at schools and within our organizations to be able to prepare for what's ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's a gender-related thing, but I think it's more of a mindset change.
Yes, I agree, yeah. Yeah, I think with the gender thing, it's just important for women to see other women there. The same with black people. And I think it's important to see someone there that is like you, that you can relate to. But in terms of like mindset, the men and women can have this different mindset. We just need different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. And probably the combination of the two perspectives is a good thing.
Yeah.
Another quick fire question. What hard choices have you had to make that may have been tough but turned out in the end to have been the right decision?
I think the career change accompanied by not a big salary was a really tough change, but it I feel much happier. In my career, I feel like I've learned a completely different new skill. And now it's interesting because as a consultant, I can consult either way, or I can combine both worlds. I can combine the advertising comms marketing world, and I can combine the design thinking innovation.
And this was the career change when you left big agency world, McCann.
Yeah, when I left McCann,
to do product and service design.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Where do you go to discover new ideas?
Oh, gosh. When I didn't have kids, I would travel. But now my new ideas come in the shower. It's the best.
long showers.
Because, you know, I think there was this really beautiful, I can't remember the exact quote by Proust that says, it's not, you know, if you're going to go on the journey, it's not necessarily new landscapes that you seek. It's just new eyes, you know. And you can just have new eyes on the same place.
That's a great quote. Being a mother and being a parent, being a digital native, and understanding the beneficial but also the detrimental impact of technology on children's development, how do you balance the use of technology against the withdrawal of technology from their lives to ensure that they have a stable and the correct upbringing?
Yeah, they have screen time. They know that they can have screen like 20 minutes in the morning and then an hour and a half in the evening, and that's it, you know? And I try to do the same, because if I'm around looking at my phone and my computer all the time, it's not setting a great example. So I try not to be looking at my phone all the time when I'm with them, and I try not to be looking at my computer all the time with them. It's just like, yeah, it's again, the example starts with you, right? Yeah. So it's kind of ridiculous to say, okay, I'm limiting screen time and you're like there on your phone all the time and not talking to your kid, you know? Mm. So.
Okay. The impossible question. So you find yourself in She Says, at a forum, and some young, up-and-coming, ambitious designer, creative, whether it be product design or advertising, technology, comes up to you, and they want to get your mentorship or their advice, and they've got an impossible, what they believe to be an impossible dream or a mission, and they just can't see a way forward of how they're ever going to achieve their goal or their aim. What would your advice be to them?
I don't think it's the end result that matters. It's the journey to get there. And you will learn on that journey no matter what. So you just have to think about all the things that you are learning along the way.
That's lovely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Two other quick questions. We like to offer listeners with the best comments a book that you would recommend people read, and we'll give it away to the three best comments. What book would you recommend?
Does it have to be... Does it have to be a business book? It
can be anything you want.
Huh. Well, I'm very bad at this because I always like really dark things, Mark. Mm, yeah. I think it's just the counterbalance to my very optimistic side. I always read and watch really dark things. But I really loved a book called A Little Life. It's huge. It's like, I think it's like 800 pages and it's grueling. But it's...
What's genre?
It's fiction.
Fiction.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
For nonfiction, I enjoy reading Applied Empathy by Michael Ventura. It's as an industry person, I identify with that. But if you're not, I think...
That's Michael Ventura from Sub Rosa?
Yeah. It has also this Q&E card, like questions and empathy, which it can help you figure out... more of your kind of personality, and then understanding the ones that you are not, so you can kind of empathize with those that you are not. So I found that interesting. I use cards in workshops on a daily basis, so I found that interesting.
Oh, okay. It's on my list to read anyway, so that's a good one. Maybe we'll give that one away as well. Who should we interview next?
This is the one I don't know. So many people, they're so interesting. My brother? I'm joking. I think he has a really interesting journey again. Creativity. I don't know. It's really hard.
Maybe it should be Michael Ventura.
Yes, he's a very interesting person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you interview Michael?
I should. I've met him once, so maybe reach out to him.
Yeah.
Maybe we can, he can help with the reintroduction.
I will.
Okay. And the final thing, where do you think She Says will be 10 years from now?
I would like She Says to be the place to go for advocating for other women. Right now, we do a lot of mentorship, but I think beyond mentorship, we need to be accountable for actually getting women in more leadership positions. We actually have to be accountable for getting them jobs in where they want, you know. So I'm trying to create tools where we can help, actively help women to get where they want to go.
Look forward to seeing it.
Okay. Well, check out Boom as the first step.
Boom, right. Okay, where will people find that?
She says boom.com.
And what about on social media? Where are you there?
Me personally or She Says? I don't have any social media.
Wow, great.
Yeah, nothing.
So way forward.
It goes with my not using the phone so much at the weekends or after 8 o'clock at night. And I have not been on social media since 2011.
Great. Okay, so it's She Says.
So you won't find me, but yeah. You'll find She Says.
Excellent. Well, it's probably the best place to go.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Ali. I really appreciate it and look forward to how She Says develops over the next 10 years. Thank you very much. Okay, folks, that's it for this week. If you like the show, please subscribe and ideally give us a 5-star rating and a review because it helps us reach more people. Just go to iTunes, Acast, Google Play or Stitcher or wherever you listen to subscribe and rate.
If you want to learn more or have someone you'd like us to interview, visit theimpossiblenetwork.com or follow us on Instagram at @theimpossiblenetwork. Have a good week.